Good day and welcome to a special episode of Film Exploration of Ash Home. We're just here fleetingly in the mix of the award season where I'm going to do a one-off special episode and we're going to be talking about the Oscar nominations for 2023, more precisely the 10 films nominated for Best Picture, whilst doing a little deep dive into the nominations in preceding years, the ever-expanding history of the Academy Awards, and of course, the nominations in general at the Academy, and are they being more political than authentic? So let's have a little relaxed look into it. And if you get snubbed by my opinions, you won't be the first, but they are just thoughts, so I don't care. I'm simply just speculating on what I believe to be true. So let's just get on with it and see what spills out of my mouth. So I do apologize. So what have we got? 2023 is where we're at. The 95th year of the Academy Awards since it started way back in 1929. So instinctively, let's look at the Best Picture, the chief category at the ceremony, the award that the entire night and build-up of the award season is leading up to. What is the best film of the year? What makes a good film? And is the Academy worthy of telling us that? I mean, that does beg the question, are films formulaic? Do they need to abide by one rule? Well, it certainly appears so. I mean, why do comedies or horrors not get nominated? It's the same reason, I guess, why strikers get nominated for the Ballon d'Or and defenders or goalkeepers don't. How can you possibly judge? Well, lucky for us, we do have a group of so-called experts who make the conclusions on this, and we can either agree with it or judge it. Art is subjective as hell. A great movie to one person is an awful movie to another. Someone who's a great actor to you is a shit actor to someone else. Picasso's paintings can do something for you and nothing for someone else. So it's not entirely black and white, but there you go. That's art, that's cinema, that's music. Picasso draws a bunch of cubes and he's a genius. And yet some random 50-year-old draws in the entire Paris landscape at a cafe and no one's going to remember his name or painting. So where lies the quality? In the brushstrokes or the meaning or the picture behind the movie? It's a question that will always be around in the art world. What constitutes good art? Can art be good? Does it have to be good to be remembered? Well, that's the debate. That's the conversation. So this year, and for the past, 10 to 12 years, 10 films have been nominated for Best Picture, where ordinarily 5 films were up for that award. The rise to 10 allows the recognition to be spread to the films that usually are brushed aside by the, let's say, pretentious Academy who solely sticks with nominating biopics, dramas, war films and indie sensations. Comedies or horrors, comic books and blockbusters are usually brushed aside. But now, especially 2023, this year, we now have a resurgence in these genres that can acquire some semblance of prestige. And right there and there, speaking of the prestige, that is the sort of film that has permitted the Academy to branch from 5 films to 10 to include the genres that do not usually get recognised, the epics, the thrillers, the comedies and the horrors and the blockbusters, which we will come to in a second. Unfortunately for Christopher Nolan's The Prestige, it was too soon for the Academy to comprehend this, and in 2007, it was Martin Scorsese's The Departed that bagged Best Film at the Academy Awards, a remake of an East Asian film that came out just 5 years prior called Eternal Affairs, which was selected as the entry for Best Foreign Language Film by Hong Kong, but it was never selected by the Academy. Skip 5 years, add every A-lister into the film like Leo, Matt Damon, Mark Wahlberg, Jack Nicholson, Alec Baldwin, Ray Winston, for God's sake, throw in Martin Scorsese as the director, even Brad Pitt to produce, and sure, let's nominate the film for an Oscar. Hell, let's even let Martin Scorsese win his first ever Oscar in a career that failed to give him one for Taxi Driver or Goodfellas or Raging Bull, arguably his best films. But it was more a, yeah, this guy needs to get an Oscar, so let's just give him one for this. Kind of like how Laura Dern won Best Supporting Actress in Marriage Story. I call them the, yeah, it's late in their careers, it was a mediocre role, let's just throw him an Oscar. Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is another example. Great film, great role, but what exactly is the award for? It's for acting. What acting is Brad Pitt even doing in Once Upon a Time? There it brings another debate. Likeability of the role to the actual acting capability of the role. How can someone like Christoph Waltz win the same award in 2009 for speaking 3 or 4 languages fluently, showing a range of acting skills from anger, charm, and comedic timing to Brad in Once Upon a Time, who is smoking a joint, feeding his dog, taking his top off, and driving around in Los Angeles? Anyway, sorry, I've sidetracked the sidetrack. Back to The Prestige, failing to be nominated in 2007, when you have your indie sensations like Little Miss Sunshine and Babel, your biopics like The Queen, your war films Letter from Iwo and the remake of a gangster movie, who won, which was called The Departed, which was the first win for Best Director for Martin Scorsese. You can see how not black and white the Oscars really are. So allowing 10 films instead of 5 films does give films like The Prestige the recognition at the Academy. Unfortunately, that year in 2007, The Prestige only bagged 2 nominations for cinematography and achievement in art direction. It's ranked 41 in IMDb's top 250 list, by the way, just 2 places below The Departed, the one that won that year. The 4 nominations it was up against, Babel, Little Miss Sunshine, Letters from Iwo Jima, and The Queen, not even on the list. So you can see how black and white the Oscars are not when selecting the best film to win or even be nominated for an Oscar. What defines a good film? Well, maybe the Oscars don't know. So going in full circles here, the same thing happened with the same director, Christopher Nolan. He attacked again with a film called The Dark Knight, using Christian Bale and Michael Caine from The Prestige to The Dark Knight. After their little stint in Batman Begins, went on to go make $1 billion, changing the way we saw comic book films. And what happens? Deja vu, not a single nomination again at the Academy Awards. Now people were speaking up, outrage, pandemonium. Dark Knight got recognised alright, but with Heath Ledger winning for the Joker, but are we quite sure he won because he wasn't alive? We'll never know. His performance was driven by craze and anticipation, but had he stayed alive in 2009, would the Academy have given him that nomination when they didn't even nominate Nolan for Best Director or Dark Knight for Best Film? Well, we will never know. And before that, how many comic book films characters has been nominated? 0. The win for Heath, though, kickstarted a random record just 12 years later when Joaquin Phoenix won Best Actor for playing the same character. The second time an award for acting was won twice by playing the same character. The first and only other time was Don Corleone in The Godfather, Marlon Brando winning in 1972, and De Niro winning it in 1974 for Best Supporting Actor. Interestingly, neither of them turned up to accept the award. One was busy and one was protesting. Which means out of the 4 actors that shared this record, Joaquin Phoenix, Heath Ledger, Robert De Niro, and Marlon Brando, only Joaquin Phoenix has physically accepted the award at the ceremony. Anyways, now we're off the sidetrack of the sidetrack because of this outrage that The Dark Knight caused because it wasn't nominated. And also a mention of another comic book movie that came out that year and caused some waves, Iron Man. The beginning of the era we find ourselves in, the comic book era. So the year after, because The Dark Knight caused some stir because it wasn't nominated, the Academy decided to double the nominations for Best Picture to 10 instead of 5. And between 2010 to now, it has fluctuated between 8 to 10. Some years it's 8, others 9, but mainly 10. So that's why we have 10 films nominated this year, because The Dark Knight kickstarted something that everyone was talking about. How can a film who made $1 billion not be nominated for Best Film? We don't know. But there we go. That's why we have these interesting films come in, like Top Gun Maverick. So 5 is not the number anymore, it's 10. So before that, it was predominantly 5. If you don't count the first couple of years in 1929, when the first ever film, The Wings, won, which was up against only 2 other films, but that was early days and they were trying to establish what the Oscars were at that time. Interestingly enough, 2 years later after 1929, I think it was in 1930, the original or the remake that is being nominated this year, All Quiet on the Western Front, which would be the first time the same film has won Best Picture in different years. So All Quiet on the Western Front, the original movie in 1930, won Best Picture at the Oscars. So it was nominated this year as part of the 10 films for Best Picture in 2023. If this film wins, this would be the first time ever the same film has won for an Oscar for Best Picture. West Side Story had the chance when Steven Spielberg remade it last year after the original won back in 1961. But it wasn't to be, as Coda surprised all by picking up Best Film, nabbing the Best Picture for Apple TV. A film predominantly spoken in sign language. Not so surprising if you ask me, when it ticks major boxes for the whole woke society, which raises yet another debate, diversity over quality. Not saying the two can't coexist, but the timing is questionable. All Actors White being nominated 1 year, outrage, pandemonium, shockingly, the year after we have the biggest nomination of black actors. Not Asian actors, by the way, but black actors. Hard not to question the authenticity of those nominations that year and the years to follow, hence why Coda winning, Michelle Zhao winning, No Man Land winning, Moonlight winning raises serious eyebrows to me. But anyway, let's get on point. All Quiet on the Western Front. Well, there's your war epic film that is formulaic for Best Picture nominations. As we have seen in many years that I have mentioned, 2007, for instance, like I've already mentioned, Letters from Iwo Jima being nominated. And you've had serious winners like Platoon, Casablanca, Schindler's List, and Braveheart picking up Best Pictures. So for this year, we can understand why All Quiet on the Western Front has got a nomination. Beautiful film, remake of an Oscar-winning film in 1930, would set the record for the same film winning in different years based on a beautiful book, so I'm told, and cements its place for Netflix, I might add, in the Best Picture category for 2023. So that's one. Who are the other 9? Well, I mentioned Blockbuster earlier, not getting recognized, but this year we have had to pay attention to these big movies because the revenue they have generated in 2022 is hard for it not to be recognized for a nomination after the backlash we saw in 2009 with The Dark Knight. So going against etiquette, we don't just see blockbusters being nominated, but sequels. Top Gun and Avatar The Way of Water, the two hot shots of 2022, both easily surpassing $1 billion at the box office. The Oscars have had a horrible history of ignoring franchise films, but they have appeared now and again in the history of sequels. First ever sequel ever made was back in 1916, just 13 years before the Academy started. But how do films like Terminator 2, Empire Strikes Back, and yes, The Dark Knight not get recognized? Well, that's the Academy for you. Surely in a business, the best product is the one that sells the most, makes the most money. And the cinema is a business, so the black and white answer is the best one is the one that makes the most money, surely, right? Well, that's one way you could look at it. It's certainly not the way the Academy has seen it in previous 94 years. In fact, in the last 95 years history, let's not include this year because we've got Top Gun and Avatar, there has only been 7 sequels that have been nominated in the history of the Academy Awards. The Belle of St. Mary in 45, Godfather 2 and 3 in 74 and 90, Lord of the Rings 2 and 3 in 02 and 03, Toy Story 3 in 2012, and Mad Max Fury Road in 2015. 7 films in the 94-year history, we have seen 7 sequels being nominated. 2 of them have actually ended up winning. So it's not actually a bad conversion rate. That means 28 of sequels that have been nominated have won, which brings hope to Avatar The Way of Water and Top Gun Maverick, which makes 2023 the first time ever we have had 2 sequels be nominated in a year, bringing the tally from 7 to 9 in just 1 year. Which means of all the films nominated in the history, only 1.5% of the films have been sequels, and yet we find 20% of this year's films are sequels, which is quite interesting. Well, we're in a new era now, so that is expected. The era of comic book movies and legacy sequels, which have been coming fast and hard for the last 5 years, with films coming from all angles, from classics in the last 30 years, like Ghostbusters, Coming to America, Scream, Creed 3, Jumanji, and others in the pipeline, like a new Ocean's 11 film, Beverly Hills Cop 4 on the horizon. It's just the era we're falling into right now. So there is no question on the authenticity of why Top Gun and Avatar have cemented themselves in the list for 2023's Best Picture. Avatar is going to try again for Best Picture after marginally losing against The Hurt Locker in 2010, the first year we got a female director winning for Best Director, Catherine Bigelow, which again forced a questionable year in 2022, when we had Nomadland winning and Chloe Zhao winning, which was the first year we had 2 women nominations for Best Director, Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman and Chloe Zhao, and the year after, Jane Campion winning for Power of Dog, who somehow won against Kenneth Branagh, Steven Spielberg, and Paul Thomas Anderson. See, this is the other debate. How do we confirm authenticity as opposed to feeding the work society's concern with diversity? It's a tough one. It's like throwing in Suzuki Hamaguchi for Best Director in 2021 for Drive My Car, which I do believe was a film that should have won over Coda that year. But this is my point. Can we ever have a film now that is directed by a white man with a male lead that doesn't hint at any diversity win Best Film anymore? I mean, once upon a time, that's all we did. And you know, I'm open to change, but I'm not open to forcing it. It needs to naturally adapt. I mean, the best film in the world at the moment, highest ever rated film, is an all-male cast with a male director based on a novel by a man. These things just happen. It's not an attack on women or homosexuality or transgender or any of other the woke concerns. It's just the quality of the art. No one can dispute Shawshank is a bad film, but when you force the issue by doing an all-female Ghostbusters movie, well, the revenue speaks for itself, doesn't it? And I'll tell you the problem with the Oscars right now, because this is definitely a reason why I think it's definitely more political than it is authentic. And take last year, for example. We had Coda win for Best Film. A great movie. It was picked up by streaming network. It was Apple TV. It was the first time Apple TV or a streaming network won Best Picture at the Oscars. Now, that's very sexy. That's very diverse. And I think it does deserve recognition, and it did deserve a lot of the nominations. Whether it deserved Best Film, I don't know. But it was a close race, so I have no issue with that. But look at it for a second. It just seems films now have to do something first or be diverse enough to be sexy enough. So here's my problem with it. Sean Hedder directed this movie. She's a woman. She directed the movie. Now, usually when a movie wins Best Picture, the nomination for director is usually there. So the director usually gets nominated for the film that usually wins Best Picture. They don't have to win, but they get recognized as Best Director. 2 years prior to that, We had the most record-breaking number of women nominations because they were kicking up a fuss that no women directors were getting nominated. So we had Emerald Fennell and Chloe Zhao get nominated. The year after, Jane Campion wins Best Director. This year, the film that a woman directs wins Best Picture, and I actually think it deserved it. However, she doesn't get a nomination, and we didn't hear anything about it. Do you know why? Because you put one diversity aside and you focus on another one. Guess what happens that year? No, the lead star being a girl has nothing to do with it. It is the best supporting actor who was deaf, Troy Kotsur, who actually did deserve the role. He was fantastic in the movie. But you see where I'm coming from. All of a sudden, the conversation dissolves because you're focusing on another diversity, the disability. Now, Coda winning Best Film, yeah, is debatable, but it's not as debatable as some of the other years. But it's because Troy Kotsur won Best Supporting Actor, the first deaf actor to win an Oscar, is why the conversation wasn't loud that Sean Hedder did not get Best Director nomination. And I think that's an insult for a film that is potentially the best picture, which it did win. And look at the years before. I mean, it's clearly not formulaic. Nomadland, historic winners. Chloe Zhao wins Best Director with the wonderful Frances McDormand. She bagged her third Oscar for the movie. I think she deserved it, to be honest. Technically, she has four Oscars since she won for Producer when Nomadland won Best Film. So that's female director again, female lead again. Year before that, we gave it to Parasite. Bong Joon-ho got the recognition he deserved, where we touch upon the diversity card on a Korean film winning Best Picture. Who cares? I know, but it's interesting to see the pattern here. Year before that, Green Book won Best Film, questionable winner about race in America, with a film that does have a white lead, but a black supporting actor who actually won the Oscar. There you go again. The year before that, the first sci-fi film wins, which was The Shape of Water. Year before that, we had the controversial Moonlight win over La La Land, an all-black cast which made Dee Dee Gordon the first woman to win Best Picture twice after her win as producer in 12 Years a Slave. And the year before that, the year the Oscars were boycotted for being all white. The year we had no black or any kind of diverse nominations. The year Spotlight won, the year Leo won for The Revenant, where all 20 of the actors nominated were white. Now, that's pretty bad, but if you actually look at the roles that were nominated that year, where all 20 of the Oscar nominations for actors were white, well, they actually deserved the nominations. I don't think there was any other actors in a different diversity that was in contention. Now, again, that raises the question of opportunity and recognition, so I do get that. But the 20 actors that year did deserve the roles they were in. The films are very good. That was the year Leo won for The Revenant, so, and that was a fantastic movie. Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs. So there's some great films there. But when you see when the boycotting happened and the following years the films that won, well, you have, again, have to question authenticity over diversity. And thus, we seem to be going in the direction of the Oscars of 2019. Let me explain. Where Bong Joon-ho won. And we're here, and this is where I introduced the film Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Now, if I'm going by the formula that the Academy is going for here, then this film right here is the winner of Best Picture this year. That's right. In 2023... whenever you hear this, I'm telling you now that Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is going to win Best Picture at the 2023 Academy Awards. Now, the film is ridiculously good. It's amazing. So here it is. This is the debate. Does this film follow a formulaic new thinking of woke selection by the Academy, or does this film deserve the win? Is this film generally a good film, or is this film ticking some boxes for the woke society? Well, let's look back at the 2020 Oscars when a similar diverse film won, Parasite. And that was up against The Irishman. Well, Scorsese got his Oscar in that department. He doesn't get his. It's about time he gave him that award. That was the year he got his Oscar, the same year Brad Pitt got his and Laura Dern got hers. The film that would have won pre-2015 would have probably been Sam Mendes' 1917, the incredible war film done in one shot, or maybe Tarantino's love letter to Hollywood, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Arguments can be made for Jojo Rabbit or maybe even Le Mans 66. And we have the pity diversity films in there like Little Women, which has been remade about 50 times, and The Joker, a comic book movie turned dark that gave Joaquin Phoenix his Oscar. But Parasite was a great choice for winning Best Picture. It gave it the recognition of Korean cinema to see who this guy was, what his previous films were, like The Host or Snowpiercer, and what those films are all about and how good this director is. And this year we have the same sort of formula, where the Daniels brothers have been around in Hollywood before in these indie movies that have been passed as too arty, but nonetheless, it is Hollywood intrigued. Now, the Daniels have been around in Hollywood, and it has been around with the Daniels brothers. There's a movie called Swiss Army Man with Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe in 2016, which is sort of the Snowpiercer of Bong Joon-ho. And if you look at what the film's up against, you do have the films that share equivalence to when Parasite won, like The Fablemans, which again is another hotshot director doing a love letter to Hollywood. Instead of Tarantino doing the 60s in LA, it's Spielberg doing the 50s and when he grew up. You have the woman equivalent this year with Women Talking, with a female director, all-female cast, which I do think is a fantastic movie, by the way. Much more worthy of being nominated than Little Women was. I feel the only reason that film got nominated was so Florence Pugh could bag her Oscar nomination and kickstart her into the sensation that she was, slowly merging over the stardom of Jennifer Lawrence after her win for Silver Linings Playbook. No nominations would be right without their biopics that we've seen in previous winners like Braveheart, Spotlight, The Life of Emile Zola and The Sound of Music. In fact, in the 95 years, we have had 19 films win for Best Picture that have been based on a true story. That is exactly a fifth of films that have won have been biopics like The King's Speech, 12 Years a Slave, Green Book, Schindler's List, Out of Africa and so on. And this year, we technically have four films that are based on a true story. In Elvis and Tar, being the two based on two individuals, Elvis Presley the King and Lydia Tarr, the first female director of a major German orchestra. And then we have true stories based on Steven Spielberg's life and this religious brutality in Women Talking. So you can see why the odds for biopic winnings are so high, since four out of the 10 films this year are biopics. Now, with Elvis, it's safe to say the film won't win. Baz Luhrmann makes great films, vibrant epics like Moulin Rouge and The Great Gatsby. But for a film that came out in June to be nominated is unheard of, but stranger things have happened. The film has been recognised, but the awards that we think it has a heavy chance of actually winning is probably Austin Butler's inspiring portrayal as Elvis Presley, up against favourite, the lovable Brendan Fraser for The Whale. A film that interestingly did not get nominated, but there you go. Why? Well, because we're figuring out why, because since 2015, maybe earlier, the Academy have to certainly indulge in diverse selections to not cause a fuss to whoever's turn it is to protest. I mean, this year, if someone's going to really complain about something that's slightly woke, I think it's probably going to be the females, because no female director has been nominated, and judging by the last 3 years, that's a massive thing now. But, you know, there's no consistency because Sean didn't get nominated for Coda, so I don't think they have anything to moan about here. As Coda, it will be whitewashed by a different diversity, which is the Asian community, for Everything Everywhere All at Once, so there will be no attention paid to it, like there was no attention paid to Sean not being nominated for Best Director. But there you go. Every year we have a different woke society, diverse group moaning about something. You just can't have it based on art and it coincidentally being someone of the same diversity. It just can't be a white man, can it? There you go. But yeah, judging by the formula here, Elvis will not win and neither will Tar for the very same reason. But Cate Blanchett will heavily compete for Best Actress. This is where biopics that don't win make up for it in the acting, like Rami Malek winning Best Actor for Freddie Mercury or Meryl Streep winning for Iron Lady for playing Thatcher. And yet Iron Lady wasn't nominated, or Judi Dench's 8-minute performance in Shakespeare in Love playing Elizabeth I. Interestingly enough, Cate Blanchett has already won for playing a real-life person, Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator, so I really don't think she'll win. And I don't think Tar will win Best Film at all. She might win, but there you go. I think the biopic that does have a chance to win Best Picture is probably The Fableman. This is where I think the competition lies between The Fableman and Everything Everywhere All at Once, between the love letter that Tarantino never won to the Asian film that did. And I do think this year will be the same outcome, but in the ring for 2023, it's not Tarantino, it's Steven Spielberg. So let's see if he can bag his third Oscar for Best Film. But going by his last two films, kind of needs to be a war film, since the last two films are Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List. But let's see what happens. And then we come to our final two films, The Indie Sensations, The Banshees of Inisherin and The Triangle of Sadness, one Swedish and one Irish. And no, I'm not saying they've been nominated because they're not American and they're European and they want to represent some kind of European talent, but that is food for thought, eh? The Banshees of Inisherin has definitely made a case for being nominated for Best Film here, with the lovable Martin McDonagh being no stranger to the Oscars, where in 2018, his film lost out to Del Toro's The Shape of Water. However, both his actors won their Oscars, Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress, Sam Rockwell and Frances McDormand, for Three Billboards Outside Epping, Missouri. FYI, by the way, there is no such place called Epping in Missouri. A little trivia for you there. So those are the 10 films nominated this year. But now get this, and this is where you can't help but think there is a formula to nominations here. And even though I'm stretching, it's still an interesting thought. Now, the last time Martin McDonagh's movie was nominated, which was in 2018, Three Billboards Outside Epping, Missouri. The film was nominated for Best Film, Best Actress, and Best Supporting Actress. Now, this is where it gets weird. This year, his film is also nominated for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor. So a flip on the gender, and also in both in the supporting categories. Both of Martin's films, which is the Banshees of Inisherin and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, got two nominations in the Best Supporting category for the same film, which is usually unheard of. So that was Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell in Three Billboards. And this year, it's Brandon Gleeson and Barry Gagan in Banshees of Inisherin, who, by the way, is our new Joker and who recently just won a BAFTA for it. Now, in 2018, Sam Rockwell won and Frances McDormand won. However, I do not think this will follow suit this year, as I really think Ki-Han Kwan will be the supporting role, the guy who played Short Round in Temple of Dune. He will definitely win Best Supporting Actor. Colin Farrell has some competition against Brendan Fraser and, of course, Austin Butler. So going by that, it will be a three-way race. But here's the thing. That year, Three Billboards was nominated and it lost to The Shape of Water, the first ever sci-fi film to ever win Best Picture at the Oscars. And what is the only sci-fi film nominated this year? That's right. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Is the Academy black and white? Yes, they can be. Let's see if I told you so when Everything, Everywhere, All at Once wins on March 12th, 2023. But now, enjoy the build-up to the Oscars, and as always, deep diving into these things. And above all else, it's just a little bit of fun. It's probably wrong. It's probably just speculation. It probably is just wrong, but it's fun to talk about. But before I go, I'll just give you a review of the 10 films nominated for Best Picture this year. We've got Top Gun Maverick, which is our blockbuster film, which is meeting our Dark Knight resume in 2009. Women Talking, which is our diversity hire, like Little Women, having an all-female cast. Frances McDormand in it, like Nomadland. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, the sci-fi film that is going to probably win for Best Picture. Also emulating what happened in 2018 when The Shape of Water won. The Banshees of Inisherin, which is Martin McDonagh's take on the Irish War, starring Brandon Gleeson and Colin Farrell. Triangle of Sadness is our other indie sensation, an absolutely great film, and an opening scene, which is so funny. Then you've got The Fableman, which is our sort of love letter to Hollywood, which is what Tarantino tried with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This time it's Steven Spielberg doing the same. You've got our war biopic, which is All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a fantastic film, won a lot at the BAFTAs. Then you have the other blockbuster film nominated, Avatar The Way of Water, trying its luck again to be Best Picture. We'll never know, but I don't think it'll win. You've got our other biopic, Elvis, played by Austin Butler, directed by Baz Luhrmann. And you've got Todd Field's Tar, beautifully played by Kate Blanchett, playing the first female German orchestra in history. Those are the 10 films nominated. Who's going to win? I don't know. My money's on Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. My money's on Brendan Fraser. My money's on Kate Blanchett. Maybe Michelle Yeoh. It's hard to tell, but one thing's for sure. When you look at these 10 films, it's hard not to say that things are authentic or political. I'm not going to say which way I slide, but it is definitely feeding a few quotas. I do think films have been snubbed in the past and also this year and will continue to be snubbed in favour of pleasing the woke society. But that is another conversation. And I think that the award season now is a very political thing. Just like Ukraine winning Eurovision, just like Moonlight winning Best Film, just like Nomadland winning Best Film, it goes on and on until someone says something. And if they do say anything, they're deemed as racist, homophobic, transgender, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, hope to entertain with my little speculational rant about the Oscars this year. All these 10 films, by the way, I think are fantastic. They are great movies. They offer an experience, which is exactly the element you want when you watch a movie. I think Top Gun Maverick is really good to have a film over there that has basically revitalized cinema viewings now. And I do think, you know, the performance by Austin Butler is one to definitely watch. I think The Whale should have been a film that should have been nominated, a film that has never been done before, all set in one place over the course of 5 days. I think that is a fantastic movie, and I hope Brendan Fraser wins it, but let's see what happens. But going by this formula here, according to what's happened in the last 7 years, it seems Everything, Everywhere, All at Once will beat The Fablemans for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. But stranger things have happened. So we'll find out. But anyway, tune in to Film Exploration of Ash Hari. I'm currently co-hosting on Quantum Recast at the moment with the guys and Cass, so check them out. They are awesome. They've got an episode of Final Destination coming out, which is going to be awesome. And yeah, me and Cass are going to be on an episode, I think, next month. I won't say what the episode is, but I hope you look forward to it, and it's going to be a cool episode. But anyway, enjoy the Oscars. It's March 10th, I think, or was it March 12th? It's March 12th, sorry. Tune in for the Oscars. See if I'm right. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye.